All right, law school, am I right? You're buried in books trying to cram all these cases
Yo.
and like crazy legal theories
Absolutely. The sheer amount of information.
into your brain before, you know,
Right.
the exams.
Yeah, it is astounding.
Yeah. So today we're doing a deep dive that'll hopefully make one of those concepts a bit clearer and
Yeah.
maybe even a little bit fun.
Yeah.
A 1980 Pennsylvania case,
Okay.
Commonwealth v. Gilliam.
Interesting case. And this isn't just some, dusty old case.
Right.
Gilliam actually gives us a really good look at attempt liability
Yeah.
and constructive possession. And it's all in the context of a prison escape, which
Oh,
makes it really stick with you.
it's a good one. Okay, so we're gonna break down this case, figure out why Richard Gilliam ended up with those convictions,
Right.
for attempted escape and possession of tools for escape.
Exactly.
And really pinpoint what makes this case so important for anyone studying criminal law, which is, you know, probably everyone listening. So to do that, we've got the Superior Court of Pennsylvania's opinion. We have a solid case brief
Yeah.
that highlights the key points. And get this, we even found some notes
Yeah.
from a fictional podcast called Case Cracked
Love it.
that offers a really helpful perspective on the legal arguments.
Awesome. So first, let's set the scene.
Yeah.
Dallas State Correctional Institution, 1976.
Yeah.
Richard Gilliam's an inmate.
Okay.
One day, guards, they're doing their rounds, and they find something pretty strange in his cell. What do you think they found?
I'm gonna guess something to do with escape, maybe some tools.
You got it. Well,
Yeah.
sort of. They found that the bars on his cell window had been tampered with.
Oh,
They
wow.
were cut.
Oh, okay.
Not all the way through, but enough to where they could be removed pretty easily.
Right.
And what was really interesting is how he tried to hide it.
Okay.
He used sticks and paper to hold the cut bars in place.
Oh, that's actually kind of smart.
Pretty clever, right? But obviously not foolproof.
Right. But wait, there's more, right?
There's always more. During a search of Gilliam's cell, they found even more incriminating evidence. Hidden in his mattress,
Okay.
vice grips. Those pliers with the teeth for gripping metal. Definitely strong enough to cut through, say, window bars or, the barbed wire on a fence.
Oh, yeah.
And that wasn't all. They also found two extension cords knotted together, attached to a modified hook. And where did this hook come from?
I don't know where.
It was actually fashioned from a shelf hook that was supposed to be in the cell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it was missing.
So we've got cut window bars, hidden metal cutting tools, and what sounds like a makeshift rope. This definitely paints a picture, right?
It started to look like more than just a daydream about freedom.
Yeah.
So, of course, Gilliam gets hit with these charges. What do you think he argues in his defense?
Well, I guess he'd have to deny having anything to do with it, say it wasn't his or he wasn't going to actually escape, something like that.
You're on the right track. He actually presented a few key arguments to the court. First, on the attempted escape charge. He claimed that just cutting the bars didn't mean he was actually attempting to escape.
Oh, interesting.
He argued it was still just preparation, since he hadn't actually physically tried to leave the building.
Okay.
And on the possession of escape tools charge, he said that because other people could have been in his cell, the prosecution couldn't prove for sure
Right.
that those tools were his or that he planned to use them. He even brought up the fact that there were these delays in the post-trial proceedings.
Okay.
And he argued that him somehow violated his legal rights.
So, what did the Superior Court of Pennsylvania think about all that? Did they buy his arguments?
No, they didn't. They upheld both convictions.
Okay.
They said the evidence clearly showed he was actively trying to make his escape happen.
Okay, so let's dive into the attempted escape charge first. The court really leaned on the substantial step test. Can you break down what that means and why it was such a big deal compared to older ways of looking at attempted crimes?
Yeah, so historically, a lot of legal systems use something called the proximity test.
Proximity test.
Yeah, this basically looked at how physically close someone was to actually committing the crime.
Interesting.
Often, it meant the defendant had to have done like the very last act before the crime would happen.
Okay.
But Pennsylvania, like many states now, uses the substantial step test.
Substantial
It's
step.
actually written right into their criminal statutes.
Okay.
And this test makes it a lot easier to prove an attempt to crime.
Okay, so instead of asking like how much was left to do before the escape, the substantial step test is more about what the defendant had already done.
Exactly. It shifts the focus. The key question becomes, Did the defendant do things that really back up their intent to commit the crime? So you're looking for actions that are a clear step towards committing the crime, showing they really meant to do it.
And in Gilliam's case, the court said it wasn't just about him wishing he could escape. It was about the concrete actions he took to actually make it happen.
Right. And they decided that cutting the window bars, hiding tools, and preparing a rope, all of that, crossed the line from just thinking about escape to actually taking steps towards it.
So they're saying those weren't just preliminary things. They were key steps in his escape plan.
Yeah. He didn't just get the stuff. He changed it, put it together, and had already started to mess with the physical security of his cell.
Right. So it sounds like just wanting to commit a crime, even a prison escape, isn't enough for an attempt conviction. There has to be real significant action towards actually doing it.
Right. There has to be clear evidence they intended to and were actively trying to carry it out.
Okay, that makes sense. Now let's move on to the second big issue, the constructive possession of the escape tools. Gilliam said other people might have had access to his cell and could have put the vice grips and the cords there. So how did the court handle that?
This is where constructive possession comes in.
Okay.
The court explained that legally possessing something doesn't always mean physically holding it or being the only one with access to it.
Okay.
Constructive possession means having the intent and the ability to control those items.
So even if other inmates or guards might have gone into his cell at some point, the court really zeroed in on who had the main intention and ability to control those specific tools.
Exactly. And several things pointed to Gilliam.
Okay.
He was the only one in that cell when they found the tools. And, importantly, the vice grips were hidden in his mattress.
Oh, okay.
And the cords were in a box with his clothes, both places he controlled directly.
Right.
The court's reasoning was that even if others could have gotten into the cell, the way those tools were hidden, among his personal stuff, showed he intended to use them to escape.
Gotcha. What about that specific law they mentioned, Section 51223 of the Pennsylvania Crimes Code? What did it actually say about implements for escape?
That section is pretty broad in how it defines implements for escape.
Okay.
Basically, it's anything that could be used or has been adapted to be used to help someone escape from prison.
Okay.
And the court said it was pretty obvious that vice grips that could cut wire and knotted extension cords, you know, for climbing or lowering yourself, those definitely fit that description.
So for constructive possession, the key things to show are both the intention to control something and the actual ability to do it, even if you're not the only one who can.
Exactly. You don't have to have exclusive control.
That's a really important difference to get. Now, what about Gilliam's third argument?
Yeah.
The one about those post-trial delays. How did the court rule on that?
Well, the court wasn't so swayed by that argument.
Okay.
They acknowledged that there were delays, but they emphasized that usually to overturn a conviction because of delays, the defendant has to show that they were actually harmed by it.
Okay.
Like maybe they lost important witnesses or evidence because of the delay.
Right.
But Gilliam couldn't really point to any specific harm that the delay caused to his appeal. So basically, delays alone, without showing they hurt the defendant's case, aren't usually enough to overturn a guilty verdict.
So the court was essentially like, yeah, there was a delay, but you haven't shown how that really hurt your chances of a fair appeal.
Exactly.
Okay, that's clear. Let's highlight some of the most important points in those like really memorable quotes from the court's opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Judge Wannon, who wrote the opinion for the Superior Court, had this great line.
Oh, yeah.
That really captures their reasoning on the attempted escape charge.
I remember that. What was it?
He said, "The focus is on the acts the defendant has done, not on what's left to do."
Okay.
That statement, yeah. So concise, so powerful. It really shows how the substantial step test has changed the way we think about attempted crimes.
It's not about how close Gilliam was to actually escaping, but about the significant things he had already done that showed he meant to escape and was working towards it.
Right.
All right. So besides that, what other crucial lessons should our listeners as law students take away from the Gilliam case?
Well, one of the biggest is how it shows how broadly Pennsylvania law looks at attempt liability. Using the substantial step test.
Right.
Things that might have just been considered preparation in the past, like changing things in your environment or gathering tools, those can now be considered substantial steps.
Yeah.
If they clearly show intent to commit a crime.
Okay.
And the case also really solidifies this idea of constructive possession.
Yeah.
showing that the key factor, especially when multiple people could have access to something, is the intent and ability to control it, not just physically holding it or being the only one who could have touched it.
Right. And I remember the guidance from Casecrack even suggested thinking about situations where exclusive control is actually required.
Yeah.
It's a helpful way to really solidify this concept for, you know, for exams.
Absolutely. Thinking about those contrasting situations helps you understand what constructive possession really means.
Yeah.
Like laws about really dangerous or controlled items, those might be stricter about proving you had sole control.
Okay, so to sum all of this up, what are the core legal principles that Commonwealth v. Gilliam so clearly demonstrates?
So Gilliam shows us that in Pennsylvania, to convict someone of a criminal attempt, you need both the specific intent to commit that crime and a substantial step taken towards actually doing it.
Right.
The substantial step test looks at those actions the defendant has already taken, the ones that really support their criminal intent.
Okay.
It's not about how close they got to completing the crime.
Yeah.
And the case also clarifies constructive possession, showing it really comes down to the intention and ability to control something, even if you don't have exclusive physical possession or access.
Okay, that makes sense. And why is this case from 1980 about a prison escape still relevant for law students today?
Because it's such a clear and interesting example of these legal principles, attempt liability and constructive possession in a real-world situation.
Right.
The story of a prison escape, it grabs your attention.
Oh, yeah.
And it helps to make those sometimes abstract legal concepts more concrete.
Right.
So you remember them better.
Okay.
Analyzing how the court looked at Gilliam's actions to see if they were a substantial step can help students apply that test in other situations.
Right.
And how the court talked about possession in a setting where more than one person could have access, that's useful for understanding lots of criminal law issues.
Okay.
Plus, it kind of shows how legal interpretations change over time. The substantial step test is a broader view of attempt liability than older ideas.
Before we wrap up, is there another key quote from the case that really drives home a central point for our listeners?
Yeah. When the court talked about the tools themselves, they clearly said that those hidden vice grips and knotted extension cords clearly constituted implements of escape. That might seem simple, but it emphasizes how the court was focusing on the purpose and use of those items in the context of a prison escape.
Right.
It wasn't just about him having everyday objects. It was about having things specifically meant to help him escape.
Okay, that makes sense. So for everyone listening, here's a question to think about after this deep dive. We saw how the court applied these legal principles to a prison escape. But what if we take those same ideas, substantial step and constructive possession, and apply them to a totally different crime or situation?
That's a great point. For example, imagine someone's caught outside a bank wearing a mask and carrying a gun, but they haven't gone inside yet. Would that be a substantial step towards robbery?
Interesting.
Or think about constructive possession in a non-criminal setting, like in civil law cases about controlling assets.
Right.
Those core principles of intent and ability to control, they pop up all over the place.
Exactly. These kinds of what-if scenarios can really help you test and solidify your understanding of these legal doctrines. Gilliam gives you a solid base, but the real learning comes from applying those principles in new and different situations.
Yeah.
So keep exploring similar cases and see how courts have interpreted attempt and possession in all sorts of legal contexts.
Absolutely.
This deep dive into Commonwealth v. Gilliam is a great start, but learning about the law never really ends. Thanks for joining us today.
It was a pleasure being here.
Take care.
See you next time.